Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
The fight over whether Waccamaw County Council should send a letter of support for construction of the new Bennett Middle School to the State Board of Public Works may be over, but the long drawn out debate over funding the local school system is far from finished. This is Don Rush. Waccamaw County's contribution to its public schools has declined dramatically over the years, down from about $50 million just a few years ago. And the funding issue has even caught the eye of some top legislators in Annapolis. So what does the financial future of the local school system look like? In studio, our guest is Councilmember Cherie Sample Hughes. Now, we did invite Council President Joe Holloway to join us, but he decided not to join us at the last minute last night. So, Cherie, welcome. And, well, let me ask you, first of all, what was your sense about how the council handled the Bennett Middle School issue? I mean, you had a vote where it said, no, we're not going to send one. Stevie Prettyman, the council member for the key vote, decided to switch her vote because she was then at least satisfied with the funding approach. How did you read what transpired over those few weeks?
Well, first, I'd like to say good morning and thank you for letting me participate on this morning's show. I really am appreciative of that. With regards to that vote, I felt as though it was quite concerning from the beginning. I knew the need of the project, number one, but I also was concerned about the message that was being sent to our legislators and the interagency board that was going to make the final decision as to whether or not our funding was going to possibly move forward. I had an opportunity to speak with some of the persons who serve on the Board of Public Works in Annapolis at the MACO conference in Cambridge about in January, and they expressed concern then that the message was very unclear as far as whether or not Waccamaw County was going to be able to support the project, and they too were uneasy with the fact that it was kind of in limbo, so to speak, meaning that they were uncomfortable with still advocating for us. They wanted us to have the project, but when they felt uncertainty and they knew that they had to sit at the table and make a decision, it made it difficult for them. So when the initial vote came through of not going through, and then we then at that point had two more persons on the council agree with me and wanting to move the project forward, and then we came back a third time, I just knew at that point, you know, while it was, you know, important and whatever Ms. Prettyman needed at that point to make a decision, I knew in my heart that it was going to be very tough for, you know, the decision makers in Annapolis to say, we are 100% with you on this project because of the uncertainty. And that kind of mixed message and mixed signals, it plays a part in any decision making, whether it's a school building project or whether it's just, you know, a small decision. And you just feel like when you're in the position of that magnitude that you really want some certainty. And I understand that. I understand where they're coming from, honestly.
Now, her concern, by the way, Stevie Prettyman's concern was, initially, was how this thing was funded, because it would take some funds, I guess, some bonded funds from the Bennett High School project and move them over, and we won't get into all the details, but yeah. Was her concerns legitimate, do you think? I mean, obviously you voted for it anyway, sure. So it wasn't concern to you, but in terms of her concern about moving this money around that maybe it didn't quite look right, or it wasn't, at least for her, sound in terms of the county charter and so on.
It was legitimate early on, and I say that because when we had a work session with the Board of Education, we all expressed the same concern. At that time, I asked our council administrator, Mr. Matt Kramer, to go and speak with, as well as our county attorney, to speak with the bond council to see if this was even legal, to see if this was something in our ability to do, because we didn't want to, I don't think any of us, regardless of where we stood on the issue, to violate any thing with the charter or do anything wrong. So that was an initial concern, and the question was asked of the bond council, and we received a response that was in the affirmative that we could move forward and that this was okay to do. Now, when my understanding, Ms. Prettyman wanted additional information about structurally, you know, funding the project, well, we all could have done that from here to next year, and however, we still would have come out with the same result, as I said in the meeting, that we needed to at least move the project forward with the letter of intent to show that we did have good faith and wanting to really look at this funding structure. We had that time. We had that, well, could have had that time. And so, therefore, I think that it was pretty much a stall tactic. And unfortunately, it did not work in our favor because of the decision that came out on January the 25th from the Board of Public Work. So while her concerns certainly may have been legitimate, but it got to the point where we needed to make a decision to be fair to the persons who were going to make a decision in Annapolis. So at that point, no, I don't believe it was legitimate.
So what does this mean in terms of the funding? Because I know that one of the criticisms and one of the critiques, particularly those people who ultimately voted against it, was that the financial projections that the county had come up with were too rosy, that they were perhaps a little too optimistic. I mean, I remember some of the council members said, well, we're not sure that we're really out of this recession quite yet. What about that concern that perhaps you're basing your decision financially to build this thing, at least in its current form, on assumptions that may actually fall through? And if those assumptions do fall through, then what does the county do?
Well, what provided comfort and a little bit more ease for me was that I did have the opportunity, as well as the financial director, Mr. Andy Mackel, show us how we were paying off the bonds that we had this year, next year, and how that was coming down, and if we took on another obligation, that would put us at the exact same level that we were while we are in the recession of the financial strains that we're in right now. And based on, you know, other projections is showing that we are coming out of this slowly. But what brought me comfort was the fact that we were still and have been as a county paying down those bonds. And when we paid those down and we were moving to the next year, putting on more debt was at the same level. And so it wasn't where it was going to take us so far out of range that we weren't able to pay for it. Certainly, we needed to move up to the constant yield rate of at least 5 cents to just even pay for the things that we paid for in fiscal year 2012. And if allowable, which is allowable, the 2% revenue cap would have took us to 7 cents. At some point, we have to make a decision as a county. And I said this at the meeting, that what we value, and it's going to cost us at some point, meaning that anything in your home, if there's something that you want to improve in your home, you're going to have to put aside some money, or you're going to have to make some sacrifices along the way. And granted, yes, we have made sacrifices in Wicomico County. But this was at a point, we were at a pivotal point with the state for funding for this project at that amount of the structural part of 96%. We needed to participate in that process because we really, really need the project, number one. But secondly, how often do you see that amount of support from the state at that level and at this time? So I was comfortable with the financials and the way that they were able to make things work. And we really, really sat down with the Board of Education and really look at this and really see what we could do. So from that, and I did understand the naysayers, but I understood that this funding structure was in place.
Well, let me go along those lines. I mean, I guess the question becomes, if we do say a double dip recession as an example, where we don't see the kind of revenues that we had expected to see, is there any contingency for how to handle the financing of this project? Or is that something we have to deal with or figure out when we get there? I mean, is there contingency that perhaps these assumptions might not work out, even though they're the best of, you know, that they could come up with, you know?
Yes, we spoke about that as well, given the fact that we were not going to have to bond the entire project in 1 year or in 2 years. It was broken down in increments of about the monies to get the project started, maybe like $5 million here. And so we did have a contingency fund to be able to offset that. And then the other strategies that were brought up. So yes, that was brought up and it was a concern, but looking at the entire project, that wasn't something we were saying this year of FY13, we were going to pay for the whole project.
Is it possible that if things were to go awry, that the project might be then extended out, that there might be a slowing of the project to extend its life. And if you did, then how does that affect then Bennett High School? Because one project is actually dependent upon the other.
True. It certainly, of course, would have delayed Bennett High School even further of getting their fields. But yes, that was brought up by Mr. Brian Ferre from the Board of Education of how you could extend the process and moving things a little bit slower, but also understanding that we did have to meet certain obligations with the contractor and be, you know, hold true to the project itself. And that's why there were so many different funding structures that were going to be able to put in place that would offset some of that time. And we have been able to, you know, kind of slow the process, if you will, by way of not voting for it last year. So unfortunately, you know, it's been slowed, but there were some mechanisms in place to even delay it just to make sure we were in a comfortable state.
So now, we should also mention, by the way, that as a matter of fact, as I remember, it was Council President Joe Holloway who actually emphasized that the projections were all, I think the quote is, this is all assumptions. And of course, we want to remind our listeners that we did invite the Council President, Joe Holloway, to join us. He decided by last night that he decided to reverse his commitment and not to join us. One of the things, though, that the critics brought up was the design and the architecture, that perhaps this building was going to cost us a lot more than what needed to be done. I know from one public comment, I think the quote was, they're middle schoolers, they can learn in a box. Well, I'm not sure everybody agrees to that. But then on the other hand, this design of this building, are you satisfied that this building, on the one hand, meets obviously the requirements of these students, but on the other hand, is perhaps not being overbuilt?
Well, that was brought up several times, and to his credit, Mr. Holloway's credit, and I believe certain several persons from the School Building Commission, they did echo that same concern, and rightfully so. They asked for a value engineer study to be conducted, and the Board of Ed did do that, and I believe it was about $3.8 million or so that was saved as a result of going back to really look at whether the building could be modified to save some in some areas. And so that was done. And thankfully, that took place. However, you know, even with state law, there are certain requirements for the square footage of a facility for the school, for the students, the amount of land that should be available for middle schools versus high schools and elementary schools. Also, the fact that, you know, technology is now in place, and we have to adapt to the different things that are needed for that capacity as well. I travel a lot, and I look at different schools throughout the state, just, I guess, now certainly because of council member, but just overall, just being a parent, just being concerned and looking at things a little differently. I know when I was serving on the board of trustees for the library, I started looking at libraries in a new fashion. And I don't want to say that I think that we should be over the top in building things, but we should be a community that should be proud of our buildings and should be proud of those structures because they are going to be there for a while. And when we go to different places, we look and we say, oh, that's nice and things like that. And we should be appreciative and have that same thing here. And it's not to say that I think that you should just pull out your checkbook and just build the largest building and all fancy and things like that. But we really, as a community, should be proud of what we have. I mean, just sitting here at Salisbury University, I'm proud when I go across the bridge to see other colleagues to say, you know, I participate in the ribbon cutting for the new facility. It's mixed use. You have the businesses downstairs. You have the students living upstairs. That is, I mean, that's inclusionary zoning. And so this looking at things from a different perspective and really bringing the community in as a whole. So I just look at things a little differently, and I really don't think that this particular structure with Bennett Middle School is over the top. I just think that, yes, there was additional homework that was done to really look at the value engineering part, save some money on some things, but technology, it plays a part in this, and we also need to be proud of what we put in our community.
So now this obviously went to the Board of Public Works. Once you guys got your letter in there, Rick Paula got his letter in there. So why don't you tell us, well, so what was the result of all this effort to try to get this money for the Public Board of Works?
Well, unfortunately, when the meeting that occurred on January the 25th, our delegate, Delegate Conway, who chairs the Appropriations Committee, he even stated his concern and the desire to have this project move forward. He spoke on our behalf, but even still, as we just said a while ago, the Board of Public Works was concerned about whether or not the project would really be funded and get the support of the Wicomico County Council. So once that meeting occurred, and their decision was at this time to not fund Bennett Middle School and put it into their capital improvement project. The other piece to that was that Dr. Lever, who is the director of the interagency committee, specifically said that if the governor's proposal to put additional money into construction this year passes, then we may have an opportunity to seek those funds at that time. But the initial capital projects were within their program. Bennett Middle School is not a part of that, but they were able to maintain Pittsville. They had some improvements that they wanted to do on that end. I support them. I support all our schools in the community, but I do know that this particular project, when it was brought before the Board of Public Works and we got a breakdown of how some of the other counties would benefit from the funding based on that second no decision. And I think at that point, you know, other counties that were looking at that, or the representatives from those counties were looking at how they could benefit from the project as a result of us saying no, that put some pressure on the decision and how it needed to move forward. So unfortunately, you know, at this time, we're not going to be able to do the project from that state funding. And I just pray that we are at some point able to do that.
What does that mean then in terms of when this, and if this building, I assume it's going to be when, is actually built? I mean, so the state has said no. Does that mean that we're looking at now another 2 years or 3 years down the road before something can actually be done? What's the mechanics there?
Well, certainly I wouldn't be able to give you a definitive answer on that. I do believe that our Board of Education, as well as our state legislators who represent us, will do their hardest to get this back on the table. It very well could be 2-3 years or even beyond, simply because it's my understanding once you get a project in the process, and I think they call it as get it in the queue, that the state tries to stand behind you and see it through, to see it through its process. And they've done that with us with this particular project as far as securing the land and working on the architectural design and all of those pieces that were in place. And I think they stay committed to it. So if they've put their money in another county that's at the same process or wanting to begin the same process, I can very well see them being committed to them and seeing them through the next 2-3 years. So that's why I really, of course, couldn't give you a definitive answer, because I believe that they're going to offer that same commitment as they did and try to do with us.
Now, it's sort of looking at the education funding in general from the county's contribution. I remember when I first got here, it was about 7-8 years ago. Contribution, I think, was about $50 million. It's now down to, I guess, the mid-$30 million mark, somewhere around $36, $37 million. What does that say, do you think, about the commitment of this county to the education system?
Well, unfortunately, I just believe that it's not really showing a true commitment in itself. I must say that in the years where we had a economy where we were doing extremely well, the county did go above and beyond the maintenance of effort, the formula that is used at the state level for education funding, and the effort was there. Certainly, if any situation, you have to decrease if your revenues are declining. I understand that piece of it. However, what concerned me, and just in, recently last year, was that even though we had to reduce the Board of Education's budget and didn't make maintenance of effort due to the fact that we didn't have the revenues at that time, the County Council still at that time chose to cut the Board of Education another $2 million. We meet with the Board of Education on a quarterly basis, and of course, at every meeting, we're always discussing budget or things that they've had to change to ensure that they are balancing their budget. And when we were in the budget season last year and the decision was made to just in my opinion, haphazardly just take another $2 million from the Board of Education. It didn't provide or give the community, in my opinion, a sense of we support education. It, to me, says we're pulling back and we don't support education to the level and the need that it's in need of. I do believe that there's always room for improvement in any department. I do, in my own department, working at my full-time job, look at each line item and figure out how can we scale back? How can we improve? How can we save money? And the same goes for the Board of Education. So please don't think that I don't believe that there's room for improvement, and I believe that they can. But as a council, that's the largest part of our budget, and we need to at least be sensitive and be mindful of the impact that $2 million or $3 million, whatever the case may be, has on the education system. Because I'm looking at it from various perspectives. I'm also a parent. I've been speaking with the superintendent about the tool that they use called agendas for the students. That's a vital piece of their education. It may not seem like it is, but it is, because it's a tool where they're writing down their assignments on a daily basis. The teacher is signing off on it. The parent is coming home and looking at it and signing off on it, too. And we just get in a routine of doing it, and that builds their routine, but also it builds their confidence to know that I've got this done, this is done, I'm organized, and it teaches them lifelong skills. And although it's a small tool, but it's an invaluable tool. Since I've been voicing that concern, as I said, Dr. Fredrickson has looked at it from a couple perspectives, whereas we may ask the parents to begin paying for a portion of it. We're also asking for business owners, whether it's the banks or whomever, to participate and try to offset the cost. It was about $80,000 to provide this for the 14,000 students that are in the county, but it was a tool that made sense. I even did the research and went to some of the schools and just wanted to see what they were doing as a result of not having that tool in place this year. They were printing loads and loads of paper, and, you know, that's not cost effective, and it's not durable either. So that's just one example of when we decide to cut from the Board of Education, there are things that suffer, and there are kids that eventually would suffer. We may not be increasing classroom size to the hilt, but there are things that are impacting their daily lives. And that agenda piece that I'm speaking of is just one in particular.
Do you think that to solve some of this, that perhaps we should take another look at the revenue cap? I know that Rick Pollitt, the county administrative executive administrator, says that that's something he's always wanted to take another revisit. Do you think that's something that needs to be looked at to deal with, obviously, not only education funding, but obviously funding of other departments as well?
Oh, sure, certainly. And this is not anything new to anyone.
Right.
I've always stated that I believe that it should be at least modified. In saying that, because since I've been on the council, I see it from a different perspective, because we do and we should give our best to each one of the departments, because they serve our citizens, and that's what they're there for. Citizens expect to get quality service, and I'm not saying that you have to put a price tag on quality, but the fact that if your department is functioning with the tools that it needs and your budget is being funded at the level in order to provide that service, then that's important and that's impactful. With regards to the revenue cap, my concern right now is that we're not even, as a council, working within the revenue cap, meaning that we could go up to a certain percentage. And in just like this year, I think the county executive has even proposed $0.07. That's within the means of the revenue cap. It gets us to where we were last year, the constant yield level, but then 2% above that is the revenue cap. And my colleagues at this point, and what I'm hearing, is that they don't want to do that. But that's what the voters said that we could do. And we are charged with the responsibility of understanding the needs of our departments, understanding the needs of what the citizens desire, but then also being fiscally conservative and understanding the process and living within what we're charged with doing. And I don't foresee us doing that. And it's concerning because we at least need to make that. We at least need to meet that requirement, because we have to be able to take care of what we took care of in FY12 and at least in FY13. Last year, I think we kind of balanced the budget a little bit on the early retirement. Well, we can't have 40 more people retire from the county again this year to try to balance the budget and to really offset what we did not impose, which was going up to the allowable revenue cap. So that piece of it, you know, whether you're against it or for it or whatever, but it's really not the issue. The point is, let's at least work within what we're able to do based on what the citizens said that we could. And so that part of it is concerning to me. I certainly believe that it should and could be modified, because I look at long-term how it is affecting us and revenues that we'll lose and have lost over the years. You can't get that back.
Do you think that the most recent election that we had, because you had a number of new people who come on, and they're decidedly far more conservative, I think, than certainly the Republicans, but that doesn't always mean you're a conservative. But nonetheless, very conservative, have expressed very deep skepticism about education and about county spending in general. Do you think that's having an impact on the way the county approaches whether or not it's going to deal with either the 7 cents proposal or spending in general? I realize there's a sort of a political question, but...
Yeah, well, it very well could be. But I think that in the long term, in the long run, we need to hear. We heard from our citizens, and we've heard loud and clear, even with the Bennett Middle School project. We heard from the business community. We heard from the president of the hospital. It was just amazing and very impactful, the amount of support and the information that was given to us on behalf of the community at large. And I say that to say that our community evidently values education. They value having safe roads and safe streets to walk down. And when people say that and they show us and can quantify how it affects their business or how it affects people coming to this community, how we can continue to thrive, then we have to really put down whatever personal agendas that we have and really look at this holistically and realize that we have to financially do something. We have to be in a position that we can compete with other areas and that we can maintain teachers and people and correctional officers are not going to Worcester County. They're constantly leaving. And if you really look at it, that's a financial impact. When you have correctional officers leave our detention center and we've already paid for their training, we've already paid for their uniform, and we've paid for all those things that they need just to get up and going, and then they turn around and leave and go to Worcester County, that's a concern for me, because look at the money that we spent and we put in those individuals, and then they go to Worcester County because they make more money. And that same thing is happening with the teaching community. And so while we may want to be conservative and look at all those things, but we're losing out on the end. We're losing quality people. We're losing financially. And this community, Whatcom County, deserves better. I grew up here. I'm raising my kids here. And I think, as a whole, we deserve better. And I've heard that at my community meetings that I've held throughout my district for the past, 5 years now. We deserve better.
Well, my understanding, by the way, that I think Wicomico County is going to hit like 100,000 or has already hit 100,000 population.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, that was in yesterday's paper.
Yeah, I mean, so assuming that's going to have a serious impact then on the need of county services.
Correct, correct. And when, you know, even all the way down to the snow plows and people working on the streets and the fact that we don't have street sweepers and things like that, I mean, those are basic quality of life things that we're in need of. And people expect... that's what people expect, and we should be able to systematically and find ways to work together to ensure that those services are there. I would expect it if I go somewhere else to live. And so I think that with people paying property taxes, they at least deserve to have those quality services.
By the way, just real maybe 3 or 4 word answer. Sure. What do you think about school uniforms?
I actually am...
You like them?
I agree. I think they should be in place.
Okay. And with that, we've been speaking with Wicomico County Councilmember Cherise Sample-Hughes about obviously the education budget and the Bennett Middle School project. We did invite County Council President Joe Holloway. He decided not to join us of his own volition and notified us last night. Certainly, he's welcome on the program anytime. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC-14.org.